Okay, so my name is Tom Carter. My co-authors were unable to make it today. John is a professor in economics at Loyola University in New Orleans. Tsang is a professor in economics at Southeastern University of Louisiana. And Eben is a tobacco control epidemiologist for the state of Louisiana. And none of us have any conflicts of interest to report. I want to start by just looking at the state level policies and health outcomes. And let's start at the bottom, and you'll notice that smoking prevalence has decreased from just above 23% to 18% from 1998 through 2010. The cigarette tax has, this is a state level, not a federal cigarette tax, and doesn't include stronger local taxes, for example, like the city of Chicago or the city of New York. So the state level tax has increased from 38 cents to $1.42. And at the same time, the number of smoke-free policies at the state level across the United States has increased. So in 1998, 96% of the states, right, which was just only two states, had smoke-free laws at all. And none of them were comprehensive. And then between 98 and 2010, the number of comprehensive laws went from 0 to 46, and partial went from 4 to 24. Now, definition of partial and comprehensive. Comprehensive means you're not allowed to smoke in any public places. Partial means that there are exceptions to that. So Louisiana is a very good example of that. So Louisiana, you're not allowed to smoke in workplaces, but you are allowed to smoke or in restaurants, but you are allowed to smoke in bars and casinos. This is just a quick graphic of, you know, looking at the smoking prevalence by state, and so all 50 states are shown there. You know, the general point here is to see the decrease in trend. And so just talk a little bit about previous literature and how they attribute the benefits of smoke-free policies. Reduction of cigarette consumption, increase in the number of quit attempts, discourage initiation among youth, limit exposure to secondhand smoke, and challenge the perceptions, norms, and attitudes, you know, so-called tobacco normalization. But however, there have been disparate conclusions on actual prevalence. The first one there, don't be confused, reduction in cigarette consumption is an intensity. It relates to intensity, so amount, not a yes-no. But there have been disparate conclusions on prevalence, right? Depending on specific subsets, the nature of the policy in terms of basic versus comprehensional. And generally, the research has shown marginal or no meaningful impact on prevalence, meaning yes, no. Now, there are two potential reasons why the association between state-level smoking policies and smoking prevalence are inconsistent. One is the data that had been utilized. Much of the research looked at data between 1990 and 2000 or 2002-3, where there weren't nearly as many state-level smoking policies as have proliferated in the late first decade of 2000. Also, and this is what I plan on talking about more today, and Jung had spoken about this issue of endogeneity and how ignoring an endogenous relationship or assuming exogeneity can influence and bias the estimates of association when looking at these models. And we'll be able to demonstrate this mathematically. So the issue here with endogeneity is a classic case of simultaneity, or the fact that the factor, which is the smoke-free policies, are likely associated with the outcome, such as smoking prevalence, right? There are a number of different specific examples that we can touch on. The main point is that a state's sentiment on smoking could influence the tobacco control policies. Think about a tobacco-growing state, for example, could have very high levels of smoking rates, but don't want to put forth smoking regulations for fear of hurting the tobacco-growing industry. The other issue is that there could be states that have high levels of smoking prevalence, and that those high levels are what initiate higher taxation and higher laws, which then again, you know, reduce. So there's this simultaneity that exists between the prevalence and the action, which is the legislation, via taxation or laws. And if you ignore that diagram, that interrelationship, then you could very well end up with biased estimates. And that's what most of the previous research on this has done. Now, some of you might say, well, fixed effects models will difference out any unobservable factors. And that's true. But it also assumes that those unmeasurable variables or that error term is consistent between years, which might not necessarily be the case. And that's why fixed effects models, though some people feel as if they deal with this issue, really don't. And we have some evidence to show why. So what is the potential solution? Well, we want to be able to try to correct for this confounding effect of endogeneity. And so what this study does is we use a extended period of time. So we look from 1998 to 2010, right? So that's enough time that covers a lot of those changes in the laws and the taxations that we looked at in the first slide. Also, we triangulate the data. The next slide is about the data, and we'll show you where the data sources are coming from, right? We created our own panel data set to do this analysis. And then the main point is that we were able to control for this confounding effect by utilizing this Arellano-Bond dynamic panel model. And I will speak a little bit more about that in detail. So for the data, we created a yearly panel data set from 1998 to 2010. We included smoking prevalence. Smoking prevalence was from the BRIFIS, which we've talked about. Other presenters have talked about. The smoke-free policy data comes from Robert Wood Johnson Foundation's Interactive Tobacco Database, right? So Robert Wood Johnson has funding that keeps track of, I think it's their Public Health Law Center, that keeps track of these smoking laws over time. Again, we categorize the laws based upon coverage. Partial is, so we looked at three types of laws, workplace, restaurant, and bars. And if it was comprehensive, if you included all three, it was partial if there was any two of three, one of three, zero of three. And there's a limitation to that, and we'll address that. I'll address that before the presentation is finished. The tobacco tax data came from the CDC Tobacco Tax Tracking System, Office of Smoking and Health at the CDC, maintains an extensive database of taxation over time. The state poverty rates came from the United States Census, and state unemployment data came from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. So this is the Arellano-Bond estimator. So we have the Y, and then the YIT is the outcome variable is the smoking prevalence per state. The X variables are the laws, the cigarette tax, the partial law, or the complete law. Those are the purported endogenous variables. Notice we're including tobacco tax here as endogenous. And then the control variables are unemployment rate, poverty rate, and then we include a dummy variable for each year to account for general secular trends, which was essentially that slide that we showed where everybody was decreasing. To remove the error term, it's first differenced, so we first differenced that model, right? However, the first differencing introduces more endogeneity because the relationship between the changes could be associated with the error terms as well. So in order to control for that endogeneity, we need instrumental variables to disentangle this relationship. Now, instrumental variables are very difficult to find with cross-sectional data sets, especially if you didn't collect that data yourself. To find an instrumental variable that has both policy and programmatic and sort of common sense, makes sense, but then also fits the statistical requirements of being associated with the potential endogenous variable but not associated with the outcome, for those of you that have done this type of work, is difficult to find. Now, the Arellano-Bond estimator, the real innovation and development from Arellano and Bond was that the instruments are differenced variables. They're created as the differencing variables of those that are endogenous or not strictly endogenous. So for example, it instruments the change in x at the third period with x at the first period, the change in x at the fourth period with x at the first and second, and so forth and so on, depending on how many years of data that you have. Now, it's a bit tricky because you can't include all of the instruments in this model. If you run this without any other restrictions, you end up with 200 or some instruments on a sample that has 600 data points, which is way too much. So you actually have to limit the number of instruments that are used, and we'll show some specification tests here at the end that'll show that the number of instruments were not in excess. Because if you use a ridiculous number of instruments, then you really also bias the estimates that way as well. And there's a test statistic that we'll look at. Now, the rule of thumb is that the number of instruments should be no greater than the number of elements, not sample size per se, but we have 50 states, so the number of estimates should not be any more of instruments should not be any more than 50. Now, from the results, we're comparing a fixed effects model in column one, which versus an Arellano-Bond model in column two, and we have a lag. The first term is a lag of the prevalence variable, and then we have the cigarette tax, the partial ban, and the comprehensive ban, and then the control variables, observations, R squared, and so forth. So the point to recognize here is the Arellano-Bond found a strong, significant effect of all tobacco-related policies, taxes, and smoking regulations, and treating those laws as exogenous essentially underrepresented their impact by about a magnitude roughly of 3. So the cigarette tax, if you look at it in fixed effects models, represented about a half a percent decrease in prevalence. That is a $1 increase in the tobacco tax. Right? That's the way that variable had been scaled. So a $1 increase in the tobacco tax would reduce smoking prevalence by about a half a percent, but it would reduce it by about 1.5% if you control for the potential endogeneity of those policies. The partial bans, there was no impact of a partial smoking ban on either, using either model. And a comprehensive ban went from about a half a percent decrease in prevalence to roughly 1 1/3 decrease in prevalence. So not just for smoke-free laws, but also for taxation, using a fixed effects model drastically underrepresents those policy impacts. So then these are the tests of the model specification, and I don't want to get too deep into this. We can talk about this offline if you're interested. But that the Hansen and the Sargon statistic relate to what I was talking about before. That you can't, if you're using too many instruments, then you will fail those tests. And so we had 50. I think our final number of estimates was 46. And the number of instruments, it's not like you choose between 46 and 47 or 48. It just depends on how many differences you make. So the conclusions are comprehensive smoke-free policies have a greater effect on smoking prevalence than partial policies. And treating these policies as exogenous drastically underestimates the impact of, I have here comprehensive policies because the point really is to talk about smoke-free, but also of the cigarette taxes as well. The limitations, first is the measurement of the smoke-free policies. As I had described before, we put all partial policies into one bucket. If we had a larger sample, if we had more time, then we could have actually looked at them as, comprehensive. And then, like Louisiana, for example, is comprehensive minus bars. You could look at states that had restaurants and bars, where you could look at all of those different combinations. So none and comprehensive are exclusive here, but partial has 6 possibilities in there. The second one is the parsimony of the model. We didn't include that many control variables. We controlled for basically SES. The reason for that was that this was really an exploratory study. We wanted to make a pretty simple comparison between a fixed effects and an Arellano-Bond model. And the last is the inability to account for non preemption. Now, that means, basically preemption or non-preemption means that local areas can enforce laws, can create laws that are stronger than the state policy. So an example is Chicago, right? So Chicago has extremely high cigarette taxes at the local level that are much higher than the state level. The model doesn't account for that. Some of it gets to the small area estimation that was discussed earlier in terms of the BRFIS, which is the data that we used for the outcome variable. We weren't able to get to that level of granularity. Chicago, we probably were, because I would bet that the sample in Chicago was large enough. But there are other smaller localities across the United States that have these types of law. So another example would be in our state. We have a city of Alexandria, Louisiana, and Alexandria has a comprehensive smoke-free law, but without the small area estimates, we aren't able to estimate the smoking prevalence in Alexandria. Now, that being said, if you were able to include that, we believe that it would actually make the findings more robust, right? So the bias would be in the same direction. So implications. I want to speak of implications for both the tobacco control programs, but then also for policy research. So for the tobacco control programs, partial smoke-free laws are not as effective as comprehensive laws. And in fact, comprehensive laws, as you noticed, almost have the same magnitude of effect as a $1 increase in the tobacco tax. So that's a pretty powerful finding. And that is from whether you use a fixed effects model or an Arellano bond model. It's just that the magnitude changes, but the relative relationship between a comprehensive law and a $1 increase in the tobacco tax is the same regardless of what model you look at, and partial laws are not effective regardless of which model you look at. Now, in terms of policy research, the study presents an improved method for analyzing ecological data for policy impact. What we mean by that is, like, there are other examples. Think about the example between walkability, right, the walkability of someone's neighborhood, and obesity rates. It would have the same sort of circular simultaneity issue as I was discussing between smoking rates and smoking laws. So the utilization of the Arellano bond model is extremely powerful for disentangling these policy impacts when you're just dealing with ecological data. We feel as if Arellano bond will become a much more utilized tool in health sciences research in the same way that propensity score matching has become a much higher utilized tool in the past, 5 to 10 years. Okay, thank you very much.